space. The final frontier. These are the voyages of the USS Adequate. Our continuing mission, until we are cancelled and replaced by something far superior. To review every episode and movie of Star Trek in existence. To seek out new guests and make them very uncomfortable. To boldly go where many other Star Trek-based YouTube shows have gone before. Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Treks and Trekkers throughout this planet Earth. Welcome to Trekking Up North. I am one of your hosts, Captain Goodwill. And joining me, as ever, is the delectable Geesian from the planet Honka. It's Science Officer Sir Noyes.
Hello there. I'm a person. I'm full of guts and meat and delicious things. Look, cut me open. You can see all my delicious wares. would you like a slab of me, please? Delicious.
How are you this week, Science Officer Sir Noyes, or is that a silly question?
It's a silly question. It's a silly question. A silly man for saying it. Silly person. Can't believe it. Silly. Stop it. It's really odd. I thought I'd feel more ooky and spooky this week running up to Halloween. And, you know, we were kind of like, hey, should we try and do a Halloween episode? And then we're like, can we actually manage to coordinate a Halloween episode? And we were like, no, so let's not. And besides, lower decks.
We can't coordinate dick at the moment because we are just...
I've always got time for dick. Let's just be honest now. I've always got time to coordinate dick.
Dick doesn't know about it, but he's got time. We have a very, very hectic schedule between us both. So we apologise that this is coming out late. Despite the fact
Is it late or is it early? Because we're pre-recording this and then we're just gonna shove it out. We're gonna shove it out like an unwanted stepchild. We're just gonna be like, go on, like there, go to school.
Like a cursed ginger, we are just going to kick it out.
Yeah, we've given it a lunchbox full of a bit of shit, and you know, a bit of shit like a Quaker bar, and like sandwiches with like a rat in them or something. And we're just like, go on, unwanted stepchild.
It's insane because thank you very, very much to Paramount for allowing us to have advanced screenings of Star Trek Lower Decks, the final season, and we thought
we've got the screeners for it, but then we're still watching them after they've come out, aren't we? That's what you think of it. Because we've been so busy, we got free screeners for it, and then still watch them after they were available to everyone.
Loads in advance. We have failed at this.
Loads
of times in advance. And then we were like, we don't have the time to actually make an episode this week. So we're reviewing them after they've actually come out.
Please keep sending screeners.
No, but thank you so much to Paramount for sending advanced screeners to us. We are very, very appreciative of that. However, we are here to review the first two episodes of the final season of Star Trek Lower Decks. And we're going to do something a little bit different tonight with Trekking Up North, because we're going to review both episodes, but we're not going to go through scene by scene and do massive analysis or anything like that. We're just going to summarize what happened in both episodes, what we liked, what we didn't like, because there is a lot to go through. And we just have not had the time to get a live show out. It has been so bad.
It's been one of those hilarious things, because I was just like, because obviously the screeners have to be watched through like a web browser because of the way that they're delivered. And I was just like, where do I watch this? You know, and I was like, oh no, find a computer, find this and stuff. I'm trying to organize all of that. I was just like, oh no, this is way harder than just sitting down in my living room and being like, okay, turn on Paramount. I think it's nice that we're doing something different, because the thing is, what we've realized is there's so many podcasts doing reviews of these that it's the thing that's important. Like, the thing that is important in us covering them isn't us describing specifically like scene by scene what goes on, because you can just watch the episode. It's more the our unique take on it that other YouTube shows have not gone before and not done.
Yeah. Also, thank you. I need to give a shout out to Clone Star Podcast. Thank you so much for allowing me to be a guest host where we got to speak to Mike McMahon, the creator of Star Trek Lower Decks. It was one of the highlights of my year, getting to speak to him and discuss Lower Decks and his passion of Star Trek and Solar Opposites and Rick and Morty. It was absolutely amazing. So you can check that interview out on the Clone Star Podcast. The link is in the description below. But we are going to kick off with our double bill review tonight with Dos Cerritos episode one, where we see the crew of the Cerritos encounter a, what was it, a quantum fissure, a tear in the space-time continuum, where they actually encounter an alternate reality Cerritos.
And I love how in any other series of Star Trek, it would be this big, fancy, amazing thing, and all of them are just like, oh, God, it's this, you know, oh, no.
I know.
And they're all just fully aware of what a contrived plot device it is. It's just kind of like, oh, no, not dimensional bollocks.
They deal with it so nonchalantly, but Tendi is no longer with the crew because she's at home with her Orion family. So we don't have Tendi on the Cerritos, but we do get to see alternate reality counterparts of a full-bearded Boimler, a cybernetically enhanced Rutherford. We see, Tillins.
I did love it how, like, you know, you had it where, like, Boimler was full bearded Riker, where, you know, they're fully confident, they're fully, like, they're everything our Boimler wants to be, and whatnot. And we have, like, we have it where Mariner's, like, goes by Becky, and they're fully savvy, and they're, like, the captain of a starship and stuff, and you're like, how did that happen? Rutherford has leaned massively into their cybernetics, so they're practically an android now. And then with Talen, it's literally the only difference between them is that one of them says remarkable and one of them says fascinating. And otherwise, they're exactly the same person. But in Vulcan terms, it's like this massive difference.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest dramatic change is between Mariner and Becky Freeman. Becky Freeman is the captain of the alternate reality Cerritos. Her mother is running Starbase 80, as we hear throughout the episode. But I like the fact that Becky has the actual riding crop from Star Trek 3, from the captain of the Excelsior, has the riding crop. And the both crews have to work together to sort of return the prime Cerritos back to the main reality.
And it's purely because they only want to do it because they fucking hate dimensional nonsense. Like, they're just so frustrated at the idea of just being, oh, no. It's like Janeway in time travel, where you're just like, oh, God, let's just get this done with as soon as possible.
I think it's sort of a tongue-in-cheek nod to the whole multiverse craze at the moment.
Yeah.
That we are seeing with Marvel, because Deadpool and Wolverine also did a hot take on, like, just like, the multiverse thing just does not work. And when you see the Cerritos just go to another, and then just like, oh, just, can we just go back? Let's just work together and just send us back. And
But I kind of like it, like, you know, when we see these things with Marvel and whatnot in the multiverse, and we have it where, oh, all of the counterparts, they all kind of get on with each other and they all kind of, like, sort of work together and stuff. And then in this episode, we just go, no, 90% of them hate each other. Like, 90%
King Billups
cannot get on with
because
you got Billups, who's leaned into his, like, he's obviously not a virgin anymore. He's become the king of his people.
Yeah,
and he just wears a crown and, like, a cape and just does his normal job and whatnot. And it's just, and they hate each other, and it's just, oh, it's brilliant.
We've got bearded Riker. We've got Jack Ransom, who's sort of like two beefcakes, but he's got a mullet in one. We've got bearded Boimler. We've got uptight Becky, fully cybernetic Rutherford. No Tendi in this reality either.
But at least in this one, like the Mirror Universe, Tendi is doing the same thing.
So yeah,
it's basically
exactly,
like, it's like, oh, well, Tendi's not here because she's off being a space pirate, but she deliberately leaned into it in this dimension rather than she was forced into it by her family, seemingly.
Speaking of Tendi, the B plot of Tendi is obviously she has to she has to reclaim. She has to pay a debt, doesn't she, before she can be returned back to the Stratos?
Yeah. So basically, the Erica, her sister, who is the queen now? Yeah, is the queen of the house. Yeah. The matriarch of the house. She's basically saying, hey, look, you have to stay a space pirate until I, say you've reclaimed your debt. But then she's making it deliberately hard for her to repay her debt. So we have this wonderful wonderful beginning section with, Tendi, where basically this is my favorite thing, because the cold open of the episode is that we get to see the collector flats. I forgot what they're called, but it's from the episode of TNG.
Oh, from the Next Generation, yeah.
Yeah, from TNG, where basically the collector guy collects data and then tries to put them in a museum. And this is a wonderful example of Lower Decks doing its thing and basically going, hey, this bit was never explored again. Let's just expand upon that and put these people back in and stuff and make some jokes at their expense. I really like that. But obviously it turns out that the whole scene is a ruse and that Tendi's like undercover and they end up stealing their ship and all of their collectibles and stuff like that. But then D'Erica's like, hey, this still isn't going to pay off your bet, pay off your debt. However, if you do this mission for me and steal this
it's a massive ship.
Yeah, it's like abandoned ship kind of thing. Yeah. Then I'll let you go back to Starfleet.
She's not the only people. She's not the only person after this big ship, because we see the blue Orions making.
I don't know if I want to complain about this or not, because it's the whole thing of, does anyone know what they want to do with the Orions? Because remember, it was originally the men were in charge, and the Orions had the slave girls who were, subjugant.
Yeah.
Subjugated. Yeah. And then they went, okay, let's change that, so we'll make it so that the women are secretly in charge and they rule the men with indoor air with their pheromones and whatnot. And then in this one, we seem to have a crew of males, the blue Orions, that are totally okay and not bothered by the females and not subservient to the females. And I'm like going, well, are they changing the law again just for this plot?
These are
I must have missed something.
These are from the animated series. These Orions.
Right, okay.
So they've sort of united both Orion factions, shall we say, both Orion races. So you've got blue Orions and green Orions. And I love the fact that the blue Orions call the green Orions the Orions. And it's just like, it's pronounced Orion!
Is that due to how it's pronounced in the episode?
Yeah. It's just like, it's pronounced Orion! And it's so...
It must have been so amazing to speak to the creator of this and just be like, what did it feel like being able to just pick up all these random plot lines and threads from all over the shop?
But it's so funny, because they actually bring the old uniforms from the 70s animated series. So right there, like, that is the uniforms that they wore in the animated series episode. And it's just like, it's such a deep cut that not many people would know about it.
I didn't. I genuinely, I was there, like, that's why I'm asking the question of, like, where have these guys come from, you know?
But we see back, I mean, with the Cerritos and the alternate reality crew, we see that, you know, the main crew are learning from each other, where Boimler is learning that his version, his bearded version, is more loosey-goosey and is more chill, not as uptight, and he goes with the flow. And Boimler is learning from him.
He's more successful for it.
Yeah, he's more successful.
He's second in command, isn't he? He's commander.
He takes over the bridge, when Ransom's not there and stuff like that. And it's so like, hey, you don't have to be this uptight. You don't have to be this anxious about everything. If you just go with the flow and just let yourself go, you'll find that you'd be actually more successful. But then we see where Rutherford, because Tendi left in that reality, deleted Tendi completely from his memory.
Well, it's what we have is, we have it where this Rutherford, the reason why he's such an android is that basically when Tendi left, he basically was so heartbroken that he leaned more into the android side and tried to kill off his feelings. So he's basically 90% robot now, and 90% android now, to the point where he can just delete her out of his memory, and then he has no recollection of it. And you just, and there's something so sort of sad about that. And then, you know, our Rutherford makes it his mission throughout the episode to basically go, hey, you can have friends, you can live again, kind of thing. And
well, this is the
he
thing,
does, yeah. You know, obviously, I don't know how we're covering this, not scene by scene, but the payoff for that plot line is that basically it's a bit odd because Rutherford does kind of like literally just like
they both know, learn from each other. They
but
both
it's a bit. It's I don't know how I feel about it though, because Rutherford literally just opens up the back of the other one's head and then starts playing around with stuff in order to make him able to sort of be friendly to people and want to be friends with people again. And that seems very intrusive to me. And it's a bit of a weird move that he's just like, okay, because you're a robot, I can do anything to you. And I'm like, we had Measure of a Man for this. But over the course of the episode, because he does this, Robot Rutherford is more receptive to feelings, and then by the end of the episode has, you know, decided to be more human again.
But this is
but I don't it's got a weird taste for me.
Our Rutherford is also struggling because he's just constantly finding something to fix. He's trying to keep busy because he doesn't want to address he doesn't want to address his feelings. He doesn't want to address the fact that he misses Tendi and that he has to deal with that loss in his life. So we see that, you know, because he scares the absolute shit out of Mariner. When he wakes up, he's got, you know, like 5 o'clock shadow and he's tired and everything like that. And he's like, no, I'm going to find this. I'm going to get this fixed.
I, he has the best line ever, which is like, I like how the tiredness stops me thinking about the sad stuff.
Girl, same.
It's like, yeah, that is, it's very much like relatable. I think the hilarious thing is there's so much of this episode that's relatable. Like, it's the fact of, you know, we get, it's quite good because it sets up, like, we can't talk too much about it. We can't spend too long on it. But it's the, with Boimler's plot, where Boimler's looking at the bearded Boimler and basically going, wow, he's so successful and he's in magazines and stuff like that. I mean, the beginning of the episode has it with Boimler going through, hey, I was going to be featured in the Starfleet, like magazine, Fleet magazine, and then he's not actually in it, but then Naomi Wildman is.
She's only like, 10.
Yeah, she's only 10. I'm just like, and I was literally just shaking my fist, just being like, Naomi Wildman! But it's like, obviously, lovely little nod to Voyager in there. But then his plot line is basically sort of realizing, hey, and it sets him up for the series, because you know, from what happens in this, where he ends up stealing the personal pad of the other Boimler. So he basically has all access to all of his information and stuff. And he can be like, hey, what have you done? What have you, you know, what missions have you been on? What kind of stuff have you done? What interviews have you done in order to try and be like that? And that sets up Boimler's plot arc for the series, which I thought was quite good.
It really does, because we can't obviously give spoilers for the rest of the season.
I guessed that, and then when I watched the second episode, I was like, ah, called it.
It does set it up. The one thing I will say is the overarching plot is not nearly as present in this episode. And
I think that's the thing, though. I think a lot of there's a lot of first episodes in Lower Decks that are like, you know, one-offs where they basically the one complaint I will have in this is obviously we have the Tol-Tendi thing in this episode, and then it kind of gets kind of quickly resolved early in the series. Like remember when Mariner just went off for ages, like, you know, went off, but then they were just back by the end of the first episode and you're like, oh, that didn't really last very long. And then in this one, it's like spoilers, but Tendi's back by the end of the second episode and you're like, okay.
Yeah. So but the twist is with the crew, the Cerritos, they are working together to send Prime Cerritos back home, but they are at both are each other's throat. Both crews cannot get along at all. Billups and Billups are beating the shit out of each other. So shacks and shacks, and Captain Freeman is sort of like, "Where is my counterpart?" And then she finds out that she's in Starbase 80, and it's just generally like they are, as you said, sick to shit of dimensional multiverse issues, and they're just like, we just want to go home. However, the twist is Becky Freeman, the captain of the alternate Cerritos, commands so much respect, and Mariner's like, you know, why do people respect you? Like, why do people fear you so much?
Well, also, why are you a captain when that goes against everything that I am as a person?
Yeah.
And then it's like, and she, you know, and then Becky's very much kind of, oh, well, I just needed to grow up and I just needed to sort of like, you know, start doing stuff.
Mm.
But then over the course of the episode, we find out that it's the exact opposite and that there's a twist at the end where Becky basically decides, basically when they're about to, you know, when they've got everything sorted and they're about to go back to their universe, back to their dimension, other universe Becky basically swaps places with Mariner to go back to that universe so that she's like, oh, I can't wait to actually be sort of like, you know, ruthless and terrible again. What is it? What is it she says? She says,
she wants to let her hair down, essentially. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to stay here and be charmingly insubordinate.
Yeah.
and it's actually, you know, she's basically gone like, hey, I've become everything I hated by leaning into this sort of Starfleet role and whatnot. So it's quite good because we get to see Boimler's universe, like other counterpart, is how he wants to be. And yet Becky's is everything she doesn't, Mariner's is everything she doesn't want to be.
But we see, I mean, especially in episode two, which we'll get to, that Mariner has learned from that experience and that she wants to sort of mature in a way and distance herself away from such insubordination that she's has, you know, that she's done over the 4 years of Lower Decks and years prior to that. And we see that twist where she is knocked out by the Captain Freeman, Becky Freeman, and the change clothes and change hair and stuff like that. And she essentially beams over to the Prime Cerritos.
And like Lower Decks, it basically makes it very aware of how tropey this is. You know, it's like, oh, really? Are we actually doing this? You know,
because that's the thing. Because she is found out because she says something. What is, I can't remember what she says. It's she says something that sort of makes Captain Freeman realize that that's not the real Mariner.
Oh no, it's hilarious. It's literally, he calls her mother.
Mother,
and she's just like, what? And immediately they just see through it. It's hilarious. And then on the other ship, Mariner basically says please to someone. And everyone's like, what? You never asked for that. And then I forgot, what's the doctor's name?
T'Ana. No. T'Ana, yeah.
Yeah. T'Ana's just like, you said pleasantries are for shitheads. And that's how they know that it's not their captain. And it's really good. And it's the fact that everyone learns from their counterparts. So obviously they send Becky back to the other ship. She gets put in the brig. So it kind of resolves things for them because it means they don't have this dickhead captain anymore. And they can hopefully be a bit nicer. And then Mariner gets over to the other ship and kind of realizes that she's quite lucky to be in the position she is, I guess. But it's good everyone learns from it. Like Rutherford kind of goes, wow, if I lean into my work like I'm doing, I'm eventually going to become a robot like the one in the other universe. So he basically goes, hey, actually, I'm going to lean out of it and I'm going to have a bit more fun. T'Len doesn't change at all. Like T'Len just makes a joke. They're all sitting there and then just goes, fascinating. And then they all look at it just being like, what? And he's like, I have fooled you.
But the...
I think the interesting thing in both these episodes, I love that they're building T'Len more because the amount of Enterprise episodes we've done, and we talk about how amazing T'Pol is and how amazing the acting on T'Pol is, where because of how Vulcans are, it's all in the face, it's all in the expression. But with animation, you can't really do that. You can't really have the nuance that, you know, the actresses can actually put in. So I quite like that they're managing to write T'Len in a way that has development, has character, has jokes and whatnot, but then is still Vulcan and still cold. It's superbly done.
It's nice to see that she's become a full-time part of the Lower Decks crew as well. So she's on the posters a lot more. She's on the promotional material a lot more. So it's a very welcome addition. But this episode ends...
Do you think that was intentional? Or do you think that was fan response?
Probably fan response.
Mm.
Because she is a field commission, isn't she? So she was sort of drafted in season three. But this episode ends with Tendi delivering this Orion ship from about 300 years ago, where they believe it's like the ultimate warship, and anyone who can retrieve it, you know, they will have complete dominance over the families and everything. But then the twist is that it's actually an Orion science ship. So it's full of scientific research and stuff like that. And it shows that the Orions were not always warlike or pirate-like. They were actually scientists and explorers, which sort of plays into Tendi's deepest tendencies as a scientist. However, the cliffhanger is with this, she delivers it, and I'm trying to find what she gets called. Like, there's something that she has to do that follows into episode two.
Oh, well, basically what happens is the Blue Orions declare war.
The whole
thing throughout this episode is the fact of what a terrible Orion Tendi is. Like, she is not she is not built for this. It's like we talk about like Spock and stuff, where we're like, Spock is not a good Vulcan, like in every way, shape or form. And that most of the episodes are about that, where Tendi is like, she is not a good pirate. She has all the moves and everything, but she's far too kind to be a pirate. So obviously throughout the entire episode, she's constantly trying to stop her crew just wantonly murdering everyone they come across and just kind of stealing everything in sight. She's kind of going, hey, how about we just don't kill the hostages, and how about we just do the nice things? And the fact that she's trying to use Starfleet logic within an Orion space, and it just backfires every single time. And throughout the whole episode, all the problems occur. So what happens is, one of the Blue Orions gets killed by gets fatally stabbed by one of her crew. And then Tendi secretly, without telling her crew, heals the wound. And then everyone finds out about it. And then the Blue Orions declare war at the end, because they're like, hang on, you stole that ship from us by, you know, doing unpiratey stuff, such as actually helping other people and sort of like healing them and stuff. So it goes against their code of conduct. And so it's like, right, great. You tried to be a pirate and you failed again. And it just keeps hammering home how much she shouldn't be there. And she should be back in Starfleet.
She does not fit in that society and in that culture. She should be where she belongs, on the Cerritos. But this leads into the second episode, Shades of Green. Where this is, for me, out of the two episodes, this is the more interesting episode, because we lean into an aspect of Star Trek that is not widely seen, where the Cerritos is at a planet that is just given up capitalism. So they are transitioning to a post-scarcity society. So you see this entire planet like burning cash everywhere, getting rid of capitalism and learning to meditate, and like they transferred the bank into a petting zoo and stuff like that. And I
love it though. This is the society I want. This is my dream. dream utopia.
That scene where they're queuing up at the museum, they're like, why are we queuing? Everything's free. Yay! And they're just like going in. But then it's like, you know, the whole planet is in celebration. However, there are still factions that want to cling on to the old ways and feel like, you know, and I'm like, yeah, because if it ever happened, you will still get people like that, because it's not about the capitalism, is about the power in which capitalism gains them. And it's very
this is the thing. It's like you have it where when you have governments, you try and sort of go, hey, we're going to try and fix the problems that like capitalism has brought about, and we'll try and sort of, you know, make society fairer. But the problem is that making society fairer will always create some people where they have to lose stuff in order for it to balance out. And then you realize there's massive resistance there. So it's like, if you tried to fix the property market, then you would get all these people who own houses in London that are worth like several million pounds when they really, really shouldn't be. Yeah. But then they're just like, oh, but I've got a mortgage on this for like several, like, you know, million pounds, and you're making it into thousands of pounds now. And it's like, yeah, but you shouldn't really have a building that's worth that much money, you know? Like, it's that horrible thing of, there is no way to solve this without upsetting a lot of people. So that's kind of what we have here, because it's people who, all of their power comes from the value of money. So as soon as you take that away or you affect that, then their power is directly affected.
So we see a somewhat of a reversal of roles where we see Mariner taking on more responsibility with the away mission with Boimler. And Boimler's sort of still thinking about his alternate Boimler.
Well, he's stolen the pad.
He's stolen the pad,
so he's reading all of the logs and stuff of his other self. And he's trying to sort of implement the life sort of rules. He has advice, but they're called he's calling something else.
Yeah,
Boimlers.
Boimlers.
Like pointers, but pointers.
Boimlers. Yeah.
Is it? Yeah.
Pointers.
Wait, so it's basically pointers or pointers. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. Pointers.
I didn't get it, but yeah, and he's trying to sort of give them to everyone, and it's a bit annoying as hell, and no one's really taking it on board. But it's the fact that, and he's trying to grow a mustache, but all he's got is this.
He's trying to grow his facial fuzz as well, and it's really hilarious because it's purple. but yeah, so it's really interesting to see. Like, this is one thing I love about Lower Decks, where it's not shy about tackling these certain things that people ask about in Star Trek, like the whole second contact that we had a few seasons ago, and then this, where it's just like, hey, how do these cultures actually adapt to the Federation way? Like, how do they get rid of capitalism like that? And it's like, well, it would be celebrated, but it would also be heavily criticized, because there would still be people who not only would lose their capital, but lose power because of this. And it's really interesting to see how they deal with that, because Boimler, who's in charge of a couple of ensigns, has got these pointers and stuff like that, and they don't really give a toss, and they get kidnapped.
Well, what happens is he decides to go. He's basically trying to run the away mission totally fine. He's working them to the bone and whatnot. And Mariner comes along and says, hey, you should loosen up, like your overworld counterpart. You should, you should sort of, like slack off kind of thing. And then he's like, okay, everyone, have an hour off. And she's like, whoa, I didn't actually expect you to do that. Okay, well, let's roll with it. But then after an hour's gone, he comes back and he's like, why aren't they here yet? Oh, no, I gave them an inch and they've taken a mile. And then where they go looking for them, and then they actually find them actually getting kidnapped by these rich sort of separatists, I guess. Well, I don't know what they're called, rebels. And it's hilarious because they basically go, hey, I'm requisitioning this sort of like this hover bike in order to chase them. And the woman's like, I don't care. Everything's free now. I'll just replicate another one. And it's like, there we go. That's their society now.
Oh, but when he gets on the bike and he's just like, when he starts to go after him and he's just like, yeah, you're facing the wrong way. It's like, damn it!
It would be super cool if he wasn't pointing the wrong way. But I have to say, I love this whole plot line though with, Boimler and Mariner, simply because it has the bit where they finally track him down, they finally get to the actual where the hostages are. And this is Lower Decks to a T. Like, this is the most amazing factor of Lower Decks. Is that it just creates things that only exist for one or two scenes, but are incredibly memorable. Like Mootsy, where you just go, you have created this thing that is now in the zeitgeist and is amazing and will never be mentioned again, probably. And it's the robots, the robots of this rich people's mansion. Yeah, and they're all there for like random stuff, like cooking and stuff like that. But then they've decided that the owners, because everything's free now, the rich people have decided to just make them guards. So they've just strapped guns to them. Like, I don't even think they can fire the guns.
No, they can't. They've just
strapped sort of like AK-47s to them. And the robots are going around and be like, I have no idea what I'm meant to be doing. I'm a gardener. And then they basically get led down to the prison where the hostages are.
Yeah.
And they're basically dead. They're basically like dead. Like, dead on the ground, and the robot's just like, oh no, I have failed as a gardener and a guard. I forgot to water them. And it's just like, and he just laughs. They only have like a couple of lines, and I'm just like, I want to see more of these robot things. They're classes, but they're just a one off, you know?
That's the thing, because they think that the away team are dead, but it's actually no, they faked looking dead because it was one of the pointers that Boimler had gave them. And it's just, yeah.
To look for local, herbs and sort of like things like that. So basically, and they actually like flora and fauna, and they actually found a beetle that like gives you the appearance of death. Oh, what did I write it? I wrote it down, didn't I? Yeah, a tie-dye beetle that gives you the appearance of death. But I love it.
The
But the thing I love about this is though, when they realize that the guys are dead, when they think that the actual kidnappees are dead, the rich people come down and then they're looking in the prison going, oh God, what have we done? Like, what has our gardener robot done? Thinking that they just killed these people. And then the best irony of the whole thing is that like Mariner goes, hey, you need to help us. You need to help us get these out of here so we can get them back to our ships so that we can actually see if we can like, heal them. And then instead the rich people just kind of go like, no, we don't want to go to prison. We're going to run away and live off the grid. And you're just like, so you're so scared of giving up all your money by going to prison that you're going to give up all of your money and go
Money.
live off the grid. And it was just, and I just thought it was just the funniest little sort of like, like what is it? What's it called? Biting your nose to spite your face or whatever,
Oh, cutting your nose off to spite your face.
Yeah, and it just felt like that, and I was like, "Yep, that sounds like rich people logic." I just loved it, but yeah.
It really is. The B plot is obviously the war between the Green Orions and the Blue Orions.
Yeah.
And they are challenged to a solar race with two
Yeah.
solar ships that navigate through an asteroid field to collect a
And
trophy, I think.
these solar ships, are they a callback to DS9? You know the episode of DS9 we get with the Bajoran sail ship
I
that
would
like
say so.
Sisko
I would
made.
heavily say so, yeah. Like the solar sails.
I have a feeling Mike McMahon was just like going, how do I bring that into Lower Decks when we have no reason to ever go there again?
It's really good
I want
though.
solar ships again.
It's really good because we see again Tendi not really fitting in with Orion culture,
Yeah.
where they are doing this race, because we find out
Well,
early on.
we missed out a scene. The earliest scene is basically that there we're getting a wonderful little scene between Dereka and Tendi where they're basically like playing around and they're doing sister stuff and they're bonding, but then Dereka complains of having pains and won't let Tendi scan her for like medical help. And then Tendi breaks into her office and checks her personal logs and finds out that she's actually pregnant. And so throughout the whole episode, when they have this really important race that they're both sort of that they need to win because the stakes given on it are whoever wins the race gets to take the riches of the other house, which basically would bankrupt their entire family if they lose this race. And yet Tendi ends up sabotaging it. Because she's trying to protect the Erica from,
Put her in a
doing stuff. So,
sofa and makes everyone else do the work.
so the Erica's like, "Hey, I'm just going to be the captain, and I'm going to pilot the ship and stuff, and I'm going to do all this dangerous stuff, and I'm going to get on the, get outside and start trying to shoot the other ship and stuff." And they go, and Tendi's like, "No, maybe you should just sit down and put your legs up and stuff like that." And it's one of these things of like, it's weird, but then she's trying to get the crew on board to go, hey, we can't let the captain put herself in danger. But then she can't say why because she believes it's a total secret that she's pregnant and she doesn't want to sort of put it out there. And it's just very awkward that she basically organizes a mutiny on their ship, on the ship against her sister. But they don't want it to be a nasty mutiny. They're going to have a cutiny instead. It's just brilliant. So it's like it's a gentle, supportive mutiny, a mutiny. And it's just like, and obviously Derek is just like, "What the hell are you doing?" And long story short, it results in the ship crashing. Like it results in
Because the
them
Blue
cra
Orions,
them getting shot
the Blue
and
Orions
crashing
were
the ship. And
killed.
then they're like, "Well, we've lost now."
But here's the twist, like the twist is that she's trying to protect De'Erica because she's pregnant, but the whole crew know that De'Erica is pregnant, and she's like, yes, this is going to be the new mistress of the Winter Constellation. I am trying to do this to release you from the debt that you have got.
Yeah, I mean, and I think it's really cute as well because she, everyone knew that she was pregnant except for Tendi because the way it works is that as Tendi is the mistress of the Winter Constellations, if a new daughter is born into the family, then basically they would get the title instead. And the old one, i.e. Tendi, has an obligation, if they know about it, to then look after that child and raise them up and basically mentor them. Yeah. And if over, is it 13 years, let's say, they have to do it? They have to do it the whole 18, sort of
13, 18 years or something like that,
yeah. But basically, and you know, Deerica's like, I don't want you to have to do that and be obligated to do that. I want you to go back to Starfleet where you actually want to be. So I wasn't going to tell you about it so that you could just happily go off and do that. Yeah. And it's a total miscommunication between all of them and whatnot. But hilariously though, Tendi then solves their situation using Starfleet methods, which is her science and weather with all. So basically, what do? Do they harpoon a comet? It's something weird.
They pull the ship out with the asteroid, but then she destroys the actual trophy that they are both going after in the race.
Oh, well, yeah, what they do is they harpoon to a comet. They get ahead of the other ship, and then what they do is they sort of grapple down to the other ships, which is all space magic, I think. You know, if this was Voyager, I would be complaining about how silly the science was, but this, we can forgive it because it's Lower Decks. And they get onto the other ship, they manage to steal the actual treasure that would mean that they win the race. And then Tendi, once again messing things up with her Starfleet knowledge, basically goes, hey, if I destroy the actual prize, then no one wins and we both tied and then no one gets punished. And then it immediately hard cuts to them in front of the actual, is it the Pirate Queen, I think? The Pirate Queen, who's immediately like, you blow it up? And so they end up both getting punished. So both of them get all of their riches stripped from them, which is not the result we wanted.
But they also, I mean, within this episode, there is a tiny little C plot between Rutherford and T'Lyn. Further developing T'Lyn, because she can see how Rutherford is still trying to deal with the loss of Tendi on the crew, because the shuttlecraft that they have in the cargo bay, the Sequoia, he's trying to repair. So T'Lyn tries to be a good friend in the only way that she knows how, where she sees Rutherford struggling with this shuttle, so she goes ahead and attempts to fix it.
She pretends that for her captain exams and whatnot, she needs to actually learn how to fix a shuttle pod. So basically she goes, hey, I need your help in order to, can you show me how to fix this ship kind of thing? And he's like, oh, I'm way too busy doing this other stuff kind of thing. And she's like, oh, well, I will fix it myself. And then, you know, and then he kind of sees what she's doing and just goes like, no, this is mine and Tendi's project. You can't help with this because it's what, you know, where she's going to come back and then we're going to work on it together. And then T'Lyn actually ends up totally fixing the ship. And she's just learned herself. And it turns out that she didn't need to actually learn how to fix shuttles. She just wanted to try and get Rutherford talking and being social again and not being so hung up on Tendi.
But it's one of those where he didn't want to touch it. He didn't want to fix it because it was his and Tendi's project, so he was doing it slowly. Yeah, so it's not about fixing the shuttle, it's about spending time with Tendi fixing the shuttle. It's not exactly getting anything done, it's about having fun being with the person that you are with. And T'Lyn realizes this because when Tendi is released from Orion and is, you know, beams back to the Cerritos, they walk into the cargo bay and you just see the shuttle in a worse state than it's ever been because she just took the liberty of dismantling the entire shuttle for them.
He's brilliant though. It's like, he's literally just got like, you know, Rutherford's like, oh no, Tendi, we'll have to find something else to do because the shuttle's been, you know, the shuttle's all been fixed kind of thing. And then when they go in there, it's absolutely destroyed and T'Lyn's just on top of it, smashing stuff. And he just has a wonderful scene where he's just got T'Lyn being like, you know, deadpan Vulcan, but then she just sort of deliberately dropped this bit of equipment and you hear it smash on the ground. And it's just like... And this is what I mean, though. This is how the show beautifully manages to put Vulcans across without the nuance that you would get from an acted performance. Lower Decks is just brilliant. It's like, I think the most upsetting thing is that this is the last season, and I genuinely can't think why. You know, that's all. Watching these first two episodes, that's all that rang through my head. I was like, we need more of this because I'm so happy that we've fleshed out the creators more. We've brought the blue Orions in. We've fleshed out the green Orions more. It's very frustrating.
It is incredibly frustrating, and people have pushed for either a new season somewhere else or a Lower Decks movie because it's one of those where we are not ready to say goodbye to this crew. Me and Science Officer Sonoise have been very, very lucky to see the first half of this season, and obviously we will not spoil it for anyone.
You have. I haven't watched it yet. I'm still in this. I haven't had enough time to watch these. Thanks for sending them over early.
yeah, I know. Yeah.
Thanks for sending them over early. I totally haven't watched them yet. Thank you.
But we are very excited for this season and what's to come. If the trailer that we saw before the season came out was anything to go by, it's going to be an absolute belter. I think these were two solid episodes to start off with. See, episode two, I preferred more than episode one. I think episode two was a little bit more engaging for me in terms of dealing with it, because it was interesting because, again, it taps on something that Lower Decks is very strong at addressing. It's like those tiny little questions that Trekkies have always had, like, hey, how do you deal with a post-scarce? How does a post-scarcity society actually operate and transition? How do people feel about that? What do they do? How do they adapt to it? And it's really good because Lower Decks just tackles these issues heads on, and they either make a whole song and dance about it or just make one comment and then move on. Like with the whole Meccano thing last season.
They ask the questions that we're all thinking. They kind of just go like, hey, you know, like, how do we flesh that out? And that's what's so wonderful, because that's what we need in Trek. Like I keep saying it, every time we talk about Lower Decks, it's always the idea of, we have these shows like Discovery where they go, hey, we can't really, we're get all this lore that exists. We're not going to do anything with any of that. We're just going to create new stuff because that makes it easier to write when we can kind of control all the things.
Yeah.
And later seasons, it goes like, okay, let's bring some of these factors in and stuff. But then Lower Decks is like, no, we have all of this. Why do we need to create new races when we could bring back, you know, the blue Orions from the animated series, or we can flesh out the normal Orions, or we can flesh out this or that. And it's just wonderfully does that. And it gives us this extra lore for the universe that we all know and love. I just want to say, like, I disagree with you in that I preferred the first episode. The second one, I love the whole, you know, the commentary upon capitalism and the kind of, hey, this is how this kind of thing happens. And, you know, like, you know, where you just go, hey, we're suddenly taking a capitalist country, capitalist planet away from that. Where the first one I found funnier. I genuinely found the first episode a lot funnier. The quips and stuff were a lot better, because obviously you had Becky being like, I want to stay here and be charmingly insubordinate. Talen being like, I have fooled you. What are some of the other amazing quotes? The fact that, like, Tendi's crew were just constantly talking about how much they love killing people. They're just kind of like, oh yeah, let's just murder some people and stuff. And then it turns out over the course of the episode that, like, actually they're only being like that because they're expected to be like that as pirates, but actually they all want to go on and have other jobs. And then it literally just has an amazing line, which is, what is it? Just like, I love not killing people. there's so many good one-liners in it. Like, it's, what is it? Yeah, and then it's got, like, Boimler versus sort of bearded Boimler. And he's just like, okay, cool. So could you just guide me through every decision you've ever made in order to get to here? And he's just like, I've written down all the things. Yeah. That's it. With the Orion crew, when they realized that Tendi's healed the blue Orion captain, they all turn on her, and then they just, I think one of them, they got the knives out, and they're just like, I'm a very accurate stabber. And she's like, oh, maybe you stabbed him in a non, like, you know, crucial artery. And she's like, nope, I'm a very accurate stabber. It's just, yeah, don't you give me that sarcastic Vulcan salute. Like, the writing is just absolutely phenomenal. It is, you know, it's on par with Strange New Worlds for the best writing that we have in Trek at the moment. It is absolutely phenomenal. And I can't wait to see more of this season. And it makes me very sad that this might be the last we get of Lower Decks. But hopefully the team that do this will move on to other things and bring that quality of work across to it.
It might be for now, but until then, this...
Just realize the argument between the two commanders, where they're both sort of like the same person, where they're calling each other like, "You sexy bastard, you steamy hunk."
I get to push a button, you sexy bastard.
Yeah, so they hate each other, but they're still gonna fully remind each other how sexy they are. I mean, just like going, this is... Although the problem is, I thought he said, "You steamy honk." I was just like, what? I think it's this idea where obviously if you're going to name the bar that we have on the ship, then I've got to name something on the ship the steamy honk, whether it's the engine room honk.
The holodeck.
There we go. That's the steamy honk.
Oh, but my God. It's,
but no, absolutely amazing episode.
Guys, that has been our whistle stop, shall we say, review of episode 1 and 2 of the final season of Lower Decks. What did you guys think of these first two episodes? We want to see your comments below on this video. What did you like? What didn't you like? We want to know.
What was your favorite quote? What was your favorite quote from the episode? Because like I say, there were so many great one-liners in this. I personally want you to comment on this video on whatever medium you're watching it on, even if you're listening to it. If you, I think you can comment on Spotify and stuff now. I don't know. If you can, then either way, I don't know. Write it on a note, tie it to a rock, strap that rock to a pigeon, throw that pigeon at a mailman, push that mailman into a postbox, and I don't know.
Stamp it.
Yeah, stamp on that postman and tell him where to take his body. Yeah, there we go. Tell him where to walk to after he gets out of the post box. Yeah, do that. But tell me your favorite quote from the episode.
If you liked this video, please click that like button. If you are not a subscriber to Nerdy Up North, what are you doing? Click that subscribe button because Nerdy Up North does so much content. It is unbelievable. We have just announced that we're
really
doing a 12-hour charity stream where Paul and Sammy will be reviewing a movie every hour for 12 hours straight because apparently they hate sleep, they hate food, but they love to donate a lot of money to charity. So please go check that out on the 24th of November. We recently just had the Monsters Up North quiz, a geek retreat in Scotland, which I heard was a raging success.
It was a great success, but I will confess it was a misstep on my part because I was the one who organized the quiz and everything, and I forgot that it was on the same day as not only a big Sunderland home match, but also on the day of MCM Comic-Con. So basically like Newcastle Comic-Con. So it was this sort of thing of like, oh, okay, everyone's at Comic-Con. Okay. So we still had great numbers. We had a great time. It was so fun having Sammy from Monsters Up North as a co-host. It was great coordinating with the wonderful Dan from Bleeding Marvelous. Because that's the thing, because obviously Monsters Up North, if you haven't watched it, do, because it's always hilarious seeing these two amazing sort of horror fans bantering on about these amazing topics. And then basically sort of getting to know Dan a little bit, because me and Jessica from Nerdy Up North went down to For the Love of Horror last weekend in Manchester. And we got to meet Dan for the first time. We actually got to meet Dan in person and hang out and stuff like that and check out the Bleeding Marvelous stall, which was amazing. And it was quite good coordinating with her properly in order to get her involved in the quiz because we knew that she wouldn't be able to come up to actually be part of it. But on the day, we had Sammy and we were just having a lot of laughs with her. So hopefully it's something we can do and hopefully we can have more collaborations between the Nerdy Up North shows and the quiz. I mean, I'm desperately trying to get a Geeks Up North one. I desperately want to have it where we have like me and Kirsty hosting and then we have Adam with a guitar plugged in.
Oh,
and basically
a live
band. We have a whole round where it's basically, okay, tell us what this theme tune is from a famous, like, sort of nerdy thing. And then we just get, like, Adam just to riff it away and just be like, okay, there you go. That's what I want to do, because he's going to be in his element. Me and Kirsty are going to be in ours and stuff. We're going to have a whale of a time. So, but probably not this year, but sometime next year we're going to do that.
General Kirky, Adam, make it so. We need that. but yeah, our friends that follow Trekking Up North, you can find them all in the links in the description below. Clone Stars, search for Trek, Trek Culture. They are all down there. Me, please make sure that you follow The Velvet Snatch. The links are all in the description. As we've mentioned, Adam Astridge Music, who did the amazing cover of Star Trek Voyager, his links are in the description below, so make sure you go and follow them. We will be...
Actually, you know what was amazing? Adam was there at the quiz. Adam came along to the quiz. He was there at the wonderful after party that we put on at Space Bar, and it was wonderful seeing him again, because he doesn't come out that often, kind of thing. Well, he doesn't come out properly,
tree.
But, you know, that's my disappointment.
He's a beautiful tree.
He's a beautiful tree. Actually, he bumped into a mate of his who was taller. He had a mate there who was also a massive sort of 6'9" Viking. And we were just like, this is so freaky. It was just everyone else in the room was just like, who are these gods? But it was incredible. Anyway, you have a wonderful announcement to make as well, because a certain person is returning to Twitchy Streams, I believe.
Yes. Wow, on the spot. Yes, I am returning to Twitch to two channels, The Search for Trek, where I will be playing retro Star Trek games for you lovely folk. I am starting with Star Trek Voyager Elite Force, voiced by Tim Russ, no less. and then, yes, Captain Goodwill also has his own Twitch channel now, where...
I followed them all today.
Cousin Truckwill and Cousin Gothwill and Cousin Farmwill maybe making an appearance every now and then. I don't know where I'm going to find the time.
I can't wait. It was my favourite thing with gaming up north. Like, just the Goodwill family, the Will family, was just like, it's so dumb. You're such a knack for Twitch and being an absolute idiot, and I love
it. They will be coming back very soon, so be sure to check all of my socials. I'm also on the Ticks and the Talks now as well. I'm on the Tick and the Talk, and I've made some rather inappropriate posts already, so I might be banned soon.
Oh, God.
But no, so we will be back to review episode 3. We won't give you a time scale because we are incredibly busy.
It's ludicrous, man. Like, what has happened this year? Like, I was literally like, oh, when Mixed Drag is over, I'm going to be free to do other stuff, and
nope.
I'll be back to normal. I'm like, nope, nothing has slowed down. It's just got worse. And then you're just like going, oh, well, once we've got Search for Trek off the ground, it's all going to sort of even out. And now you're like, nope, everything's on fire.
But I am incredibly thankful for Mike and Shaw from Clone Star, because they've given me opportunities that I would never have been able to get. So on top of reviewing Lower Decks for Trekking Up North, I will also be interviewing the episode's directors each week,
which
for
is
Clone Star.
Absolutely. And obviously Clone Star is amazing. We had such a good time with Mike in Las Vegas. It's like, they are great people, those two.
So make sure that you follow them. But that is it for this week's Trekking Up North. I would like to thank my delicious Geesian, Science Officer Sir Noise, for attending. Don't pull that face. It looks like you're passing wind.
Maybe I am.
Maybe I am.
But I am passing wind.
Until the next time we see you, my lovelies, I want you all to stay safe, look after each other, and as ever on Trek It Up North, Miles.
Miles! You
Miles!